This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB. If you like the way I talk, then why am I on your mind? If you don't like the way I rock, then why are we wasting time? We fight and we argue, you'll still love me blind. If we don't mess this whole thing up, guaranteed I can blow your mind. One tonight I'm alive in a dollar sign, guaranteed I can blow your mind. One tonight I'm alive in a dollar sign, guaranteed I can blow your mind. One.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis. I am your host, Kira Davis, and this is the podcast where we take on hot topics, hot button issues, and we discuss the talking points on those issues, and we draw those talking points all the way out to their logical conclusion. Because I believe that sometimes when we examine what we're saying, we're not always saying exactly what we think we are. This is, of course, an exercise in critical thinking. This is an exercise in persuasion. And of course, it's an exercise in being confident in what you believe, because I think that when you are confident in what you believe, it makes political conversations a lot less tense. You're not going into a conversation to convince anyone so that you yourself can be convinced that you're right. You're just having an interesting conversation. So I think a lot of our political tension right now boils down to the fact that we're not totally confident in what we believe. And so it manifests itself as tension, as fear, as intolerance, or whatever. And then we get frustrated when we're talking with people and they're making points that we can't refute or that we might not have thought about properly. So it's just really important for us to be able to think through our arguments, think through the pros and cons, the angles, the all different ideological bents. These days, it's really important. It's really important that we avoid the temptation to sit in our echo chambers. And it's so easy, and it's becoming easier by the day, because the social media platforms that we've come to rely on for communications are actively censoring and squashing certain parts of the conversation. So it's easier than ever. And plus, they have these algorithms, right, that make it so that you only see certain things, even on your Facebook feed. You might be friends with hundreds of people, but only see the same 12 people in your feed. Facebook has decided that's what's important for you to see. And so it's very, very easy for us to believe that our bubble is actually more expansive than it is. So I think that my introduction here is really relevant to today's subject. Today's subject is a little different, I guess. Today's subject is, well, tangentially, I guess, but he's going to lead us into a larger discussion here. I want to talk about Ravi Zacharias. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Christian apologetics or the world of the celebrity Christian pastor or speaker, Ravi Zacharias is a famous Christian apologist, and he passed away last year. And he had a huge ministry, Ravi Zacharias International Ministries, RISM, very well known for his work in the arena of Christian apologetics. And posthumously, his organization did an investigation on him and uncovered all kinds of accusations that they say are proven now of sexual misconduct, as they say, sexual abuse, and perhaps even rape. These charges for Ravi Zacharias go all the way back to 2017. I didn't know about any of this. I've never followed him very closely. Mostly when I've seen him, it's just been in clips of other people. But I've always liked what he had to say. He seemed like a typical and engaging Christian apologist. And very intelligent, though. And very, very well known among the world of Christian apologists. And for those of us who are really interested in theology, his words were around a lot. So he carried a lot of influence. So there were accusations against him years ago about, it was a sexting scandal, and it kind of went away. He claimed that this was just a husband and wife up in Canada who were trying to extort him from money, and it just kind of got swept under the rug. one of his main detractors was an atheist skeptic who kind of busts Christian frauds, right? And so he has like a little organization or a podcast or something called Ravi Watch, where he was actually trying to tell people, yo, this guy's not on the up and up. And a lot of people dismissed him because he was an atheist and they just thought, oh, he's got an axe to grind or something. And it was just so easy to dismiss him. And now a lot of Christian ministers and podcasters and media people and pastors are having to back up and apologize for their automatic support of Ravi Zacharias. Again, these are not allegations anymore. His own organization conducted the investigation and released, I believe it was a 54-page report on the allegations against him. Accusations. I mean, there's no question anymore that these things happen. And I'll read to you some of the things. In case you're not familiar, I know a lot of my listeners are members of the church, but in case not, let me read some of the accusations against him, some of the things that the investigation uncovered. So I'll read you the report from the Christian Post. Ravi Zacharias International Ministries issued an apology Thursday as it announced the results of a months-long independent investigation in which victims claimed the late Christian apologist engaged in sexting and unwanted touching, spiritual abuse, and rape during his life. Atlanta law firm Miller Martin independent investigators hired by RISM, released an in-depth report this week detailing the serious allegations of sexual misconduct by Zacharias. In a statement accompanying the report, the board of RISM said it was, quote, shocked and grieved by Ravi's actions and feels, quote, a deep need for corporate repentance. We believe not only the women who made their allegations public, but also additional women who did not previously make public allegations against Ravi, but whose identities and stories were uncovered during the investigation, the RISM statement explains. Tragically, witnesses described encounters including sexting, unwanted touching, spiritual abuse, and rape. We are devastated by what the investigation has shown and are filled with sorrow for the women who were hurt by this terrible abuse. And I probably should have given you a warning before in case you're traveling and listening to this with smaller children, but I'm going to read on in this report and perhaps you just want to, I'm just going to read their words, but perhaps what you've heard is enough for your kids should you be traveling some. So turn this down or turn it off and come back to it later. They go on to say, tragically, witnesses, read that part. The lengthy report includes interviews with more than a dozen massage therapists who treated Zacharias over the years. One massage therapist said the evangelist often tried for, quote, more than a massage, while four massage therapists said Zacharias masturbated or asked them to touch his genitals during massages. Five said he touched or rubbed them inappropriately. Another massage therapist reported details of many encounters over a period of years that she described as rape. Only one of the witnesses we interviewed said that Mr. Zacharias engaged in sexual intercourse, the report states. This witness reported details of many encounters over a period of years that she described as rape. To protect her identity, this report does not disclose many details that she shared with us. After Zacharias talked with her about her faith and finances, establishing himself as a father figure, he arranged for his ministry to provide her with financial support. However, he then demanded sex and warned her not ever to speak out against him or she would be responsible for the millions of souls whose salvation would be lost if his reputation were damaged. A number of aspects of this account involved similar behavior and escalation as the accounts of other therapists who would not have known each other and who treated Mr. Zacharias in different contexts over time. The investigation discovered that a collection of explicit photos, many of them of much younger women, were also found in Zacharias's possession. Romantic emails Zacharias sent to a woman in South Korea and a massage therapist in Thailand, whom he called his angel, were recovered. We also reviewed Mr. Zacharias's electronic devices and found evidence of text and email-based relationships with women who were not his wife, as well as over 200 selfie-style photographs of women. So in 2017, Canadian Lorianne Thompson accused Zacharias of engaging in a sexually inappropriate online relationship. The apologist denied the claims, accusing her and her husband of extortion. And he basically buried them. And everybody went on their way. Several massage therapists at day spas co-owned by the prolific speaker. This guy owned massage therapy spas as a part of his ministry. You get like how deep this goes? He actually owned massage parlors. Several massage therapists at day spas co-owned by the prolific speaker and author alleged that he would expose himself, masturbate, ask for explicit photos, and proposition them during his treatment for back pain. So those are pretty heavy stuff. And for me, like I said, I admittedly wasn't a huge Ravi Zacharias follower, but of course I love Christian apologetics. I'm really into theology. So of course I've heard him and know who he is. And but there are people who really, really were huge followers and fans of Ravi Zacharias who were deeply invested in the words that he spoke, not to mention the people that he was mentoring, right, and the people that he was leading in his ministry. But he was very respected. So this has been devastating to the Christian community in a lot of ways, because it looks like we're not just talking about a man who fell victim to temptation, right, who got into the ministry and really hoped to make a difference and then fell to the very common temptations of fame and wealth and adoration. It looks like he was a fraud all the time. It looks like Ravi Zacharias wasn't even ever a Christian, that this was simply a vocation for him. And he found a way to make money and have his way with women and not be held accountable for it. It sounds like he was always a fraud. And I think more than people being devastated at the victimization of these women, there is also this sense of, how could I have been so stupid? How could I have not seen this? You know, now you feel like you're a party to the victimization of these women, and maybe in a way we all are because we just ignored this stuff. You feel like you're a party to it. So there's all kinds of shame that comes with this by just even not knowing him, but just being tangentially connected to him, just through the words that you listened to him say, or through the questions that you didn't ask. Now, you may be asking yourself, why is Kira, I mean, I do like to take it to church on this show, y'all know that, but you may be asking yourself, why is Kira taking on this issue of this Christian apologist and his nasty, tragic end on Just Listen to Yourself? But this scandal's been broken for a while now, a few weeks now, and I've been thinking about this a lot because I've been watching some of my favorite Christian broadcasters and commentators and apologists now have to reckon publicly with what we all were a party to, you know, what we all allowed to happen, the women that came forward whom we, and I say we just as a church, like I said, I didn't know about these allegations, but if I'm being honest, I'm not sure that I would have believed them had I known about them at the time. So I'm just as guilty as the next person. So what we allowed ourselves to believe. And one of my favorite podcasts is Unbelievable with Justin Brierley. Go look that up. If you love apologetics, if you love debate and polite debate and respectful debate, it's a wonderful show. My friend Wendy and I had the privilege to visit his studio in London a couple of years ago, and we attended the Unbelievable conference there. And by the way, it was also the weekend that Harry and Meghan got married. It was a wonderful experience. I love the show, and it's British, so it's all very polite. So Justin Brierley, and honestly, Justin, probably politically speaking, we don't agree on a lot, but as a broadcaster and a Christian, Justin is just incredibly talented. And he's a very talented host and moderator and someone I think of as reasonable and even-handed. And he had to cut a video this past week about what he chose to believe and not to believe with the Ravi scandal, and how he's having to kind of reckon with his own confirmation bias and what that allowed him to believe. It was a wonderful video. I'm going to play it here for you in a second. But it, I thought what he had to say was really good. But as I was listening to Justin, I thought to myself, is there a way to take this situation and his admission of confirmation bias and how it led him to ignore certain details and certain truths in favor of what he wanted to believe? Is there a way to take that and posit that out to the political arena? Because sometimes even on his show, Justin will talk politics, particularly during the Trump years. There were a few episodes about, should Christians support Trump? Can Christians believe Trump? Is the American church too pro-Trump? And as a somebody who's in politics, now don't get me wrong, I love Justin. I will listen to him no matter what he is talking about, no matter if I disagree with him. I love Justin. But as an American conservative, it would always bother me because he would always be framing the questions from the point of view that support for Trump is sinful, you know? But that was his bias, right? Because he has a framework that tells him that Trump is racist, that Trump is homophobic, that Trump is awful. Trump said, look at this locker room talk that he engaged in. Like, this is horrible. Should Christians even be able to vote? That, you know, he never asked the question, should Christians vote for Hillary? There's no show on Justin's network, should Christians support the Clintons? You know, should Christians support Joe Biden? So it's even in the framing of the question is the bias. And again, I don't fault Justin for that. It's just, that's how he frames it. That's how he sees it. I know we disagree on some political things and I'm fine with it. So I'm not accusing him of anything. But it just made me think, like, every time I hear one of those, should Christians do X, Y, Z for Trump? And I'm always like, how come he never frames this question from the other side? You know, he never asked, like, there are many reasons why a Christian would not vote for Hillary Clinton. Many, many reasons that are just as bad as the reasons people say they would never vote for a Trump. So listening to him talk about Ravi and his confirmation bias, it made me think, like, well, what if Justin and people like Justin could take that, this lesson that we're all learning together right now, and sort of posit that out into the political arena? If we're wrong about Ravi, what else are we wrong about? Is there a possibility that we could be wrong about our political opponents? Is there a possibility that the information that we've been receiving or allowing ourselves to receive about people of the opposite ideological bent, is there a way that perhaps we're not getting all the information? That perhaps we've allowed ourselves to frame it in a certain way that might not be the whole truth or represent the whole truth? Is there a possibility that the people that we've been looking at and accusing of being, pick your insult, pick your, you know, a filthy libtard. I hate that term, by the way. I hate it. But this is a term some mean people use, a libtard or a right-wing nut job, or, you know, if you're questioning election results, or you must be QAnon, or is there a way that we can look at those, whoever that person is that you think is the craziest person on the political spectrum and is a danger and should be banned from the public square? Is there a way to look at that person and say, maybe I don't have all the information about that person? Maybe some of my confirmation bias has caused me to ignore certain truths about this person or the things they believe and accept certain untruths.
Politics are becoming more and more divisive every day. My name is Colin Jackson. I'm the co-host of Not Another Political Podcast, where we reject popular opinions and prioritize solutions over partisan dogma. Download Not Another Political Podcast on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast entertainment today.
Yeah.
I just thought it was an interesting question as I listened to Justin break down what he has experienced with having to come to terms with the truth about Ravi Zacharias. So, Justin, if you're listening, I don't mean to pick on you, but you really inspired this episode, and in a good way, in all the best ways. I think this is a subject that we need to talk about, and I talk about a lot on this show. As I say, I'm a conservative. I don't hide that. I'm not going to pretend like I don't have my conservative and right of center points of view. Of course I do, but as you all know, if you're a regular listener, I fully encourage open and not just tolerant, but happy and joyful debate over both sides. And I think a lot of times we're so divided because we haven't taken the time to understand each other. We've believed the headlines about each other, but we've never dug underneath them. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to stop. I'm going to play Justin's remarks for you. And then I'm going to go through my little list of talking points or of thoughts that I had as he was talking. And I want to reapply those to the political arena and see if there's some lessons from this terrible scandal that we are all a party to in the Christian community, even just by way of not taking some of the accusations seriously. Is there a way that we can take this lesson and apply it to our political discourse in a positive way? So, ladies and gentlemen, here is Justin Brierley from the Unbelievable podcast. You can look him up on YouTube. Just look up Unbelievable on YouTube or go find him on Twitter at UnbelievableJB. Justin Brierley.
Video reflection from me on the Ravi Zacharias scandal that's shaken the world of Christian apologetics, especially since the release of the independent report, which leaves no doubt about the scale of Ravi's deception and abuse. I didn't want it to be true, but it was true. And now a global ministry has been shipwrecked, and the legacy of one of the most influential Christian apologists has been just swept away.
All right, I'll stop right here. Maybe this is the best way to go through it, because he's got a few really good nuggets, and I'm getting older. I can't remember them all the way till the end. All right. He says, I didn't want it to be true. That's a really hard thing to say. I mean, I know Justin. We're not the best of friends or anything, but we're acquainted, and I've met him personally. He is a genuinely warm, just some people you meet, you know, they're sincere. And he is that guy. So for him to say this, like, I didn't want it to be true, that takes a lot of guts. He's admitting that he pushed aside the evidence, the accusations. He pushed aside the pain of these women because he wanted the hero Ravi to be true. And don't we do this a lot in politics? We hear disparaging things about the politicians that we like, or we hear they support this thing or that thing, and we don't want it to be true, so we deny it altogether, which is different than you saying, well, I know this is true about them and I just don't care, right? That's one thing. As you guys know on this show, I was like, I'd rather you say that. Just be honest about what you believe. Be honest about where you are. If you don't care that your politician has sexual encounters with his interns in the Oval Office, then say that. That is fine. Let's just all be honest about where we're starting from in the discussions. But there are a lot of people out there who are faced with evidence, who are faced with information, studies, reports, and they don't want it to be true. And so they make it not true in their minds. And we do that with each other. I can remember, I've told this story before on the show, but I can remember watching the late, great Anthony Bourdain. Remember his show that he traveled all over? No reservations. He traveled all over. Anyways, he was in Beirut years ago, and Beirut kind of erupted into a mini revolution while he was there. Americans and other foreign guests had to be ferried out, flown out. They were trapped in their hotel, which was a luxury hotel, by the way, so it wasn't the worst place to be trapped. But they were trapped in, it was quite dramatic, trapped in their hotel. They were filming the whole thing on the roof, on the pool deck with all the other guests, kind of looking at bombs dropping and watching the destruction around them and wondering when it was going to get to their hotel. And finally, a U.S. Naval ship, I guess, arrived. And I guess the Navy gives rides to the Marines. So the Marines were there, too. And so they were all hurried to the port to get on this ship to get ferried away. And as these young men are helping them into the boats to ferry them off to the main ship. I'm not a Navy ship person. I don't know what we call these things. The big boat that they put our Army people in. You guys know what I mean. So he's getting on this smaller boat, and these young men and women are doing their jobs, you know, making sure that everybody's cared for, making sure that everyone's safe. They get them to the deck of this boat. Everyone breathes a sigh of relief. And Anthony Bourdain's narration is, I was surprised by how warm, kind, and affectionate these young men and women in uniform were. You see, Anthony's a hippie, or was, God rest his soul. And he went into that interaction with the idea that these people were morons, that they joined the military because they had no college opportunity, that they probably weren't very thinking people, that they were probably very rigid because military life is very rigid. He had totally different expectations of what a young man in the military was like and what that young man would treat the people he's supposedly serving like. He didn't want the good part to be true, so he never went and sought it out. He was happy to think that these people were people he would never like until he was confronted with them personally, and it changed his view of them. That's what Justin's statement here reminds me of. Sometimes we don't want to believe that that other person that we think we hate is actually nice, that they actually do help people, that they actually are kind, that they actually do have a family that they love and loves them, that they actually have thought about these things and have just come to a different conclusion, that they actually would sit down with you for a beer or a meal and not insult you. Sometimes we don't want to believe those things about other people, and so we consciously or subconsciously choose not to.
And I felt so sad for those close to Ravi whose trust was abused, for the many who believed because of his ministry and have now been left devastated, and most especially the victims who have suffered horrible spiritual, emotional and sexual abuse. And in the case of Lorianne Thompson, public defamation at the hands of Ravi and the ministry. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Says Jeremiah 17, verse 9. And that verse has been in my head recently, not just because of how it speaks to Ravi's own deceptive heart, but because of the ways that we're all willing to be deceived in one way or another.
Thank you, Justin. That's what inspired this podcast. We are all willing to be deceived by each other in one way or another. And even sometimes I've been listening to his podcast. Justin rarely dips into politics, rarely. But when he does, it's usually American politics, and it usually has to do with Trump and conservatives. And sometimes when I'm listening, I'm thinking the people that he has on to argue they seem too willing to be deceived about the narrative. Like, there's never really any questioning of the narrative on who a Trump voter might be. And the reason I'm framing it like this is because this is how Justin frames it, right? It's not a two-sided thing. It is the way that they talk about it on his podcast is usually an accusation against conservatives or American Republicans or American Trump voters. And again, this is not to pick on Justin because I love his show and I listen to everyone, no matter what. I love everything about it. But this is just my wheels turning here. And so sometimes I listen to those shows and I think, okay, in what ways are these people deceived about each other, willing to be deceived about each other? Is there the idea that one person would sit on one side and say, my guy or gal is beyond reproach. The person that I would vote for is obviously the choice that any good Christian would vote for. And never question themselves and say, well, hey, maybe I have been deceived. Maybe I haven't received all the information, or maybe I have heard information or have heard arguments against this point of view that I'm offering. And I haven't even really considered it. I haven't really given it any critical thought. I've just dismissed it. I've been willing to be deceived about who this person is on the other side of the table from me. And that's a sentiment that goes both ways in politics, in faith, in your daily life, right? That's neither right nor left. We all do that. We allow ourselves to be deceived about the people sitting across the table from us oftentimes because we don't want what they believe to be true.
There's been a flood of responses since the independent report was published, laying bare the scale of Ravi's deceit. They debated how it happened, why it happened, whether Azim can or should recover from this, whether Ravi's book should be withdrawn, and so on. And this isn't really a response about any of that precisely. It's more of a personal response, a mea culpa of sorts. Ravi was one of the preeminent Christian apologists in the world, and although I personally never met him or interviewed him for my Unbelievable show, his fall touches very closely to home because I have worked closely with the wider team of Azim. And shortly after his death in May 2020, I hosted a tribute show to Ravi, interviewing key leaders from Azim. The warm words and anecdotes that were shared then have just turned to ashes in all our mouths, as have those that were shared by the celebrities and church leaders at his funeral service, which was live streamed to millions. We've now taken the step of taking down our own YouTube edition of that show we recorded, and I've added a disclaimer in our podcast archive that that show clearly no longer represents a true picture of Ravi.
Can I just interject here? What do y'all think I'm going to say about him taking the YouTube thing down? I understand it. I do. But I think it should be left up. I do. I think it should stand as a monument. This is a little bit of a sidebar from the core of this episode. But one of the things that's bothering me about this discussion we're having in the church, the Christian church, about Ravi Zacharias is when Justin's not one of them, by the way. He's been very bold about being completely transparent about this. But when a lot of these Christian commentators are talking about Ravi, let's say, you know, there's these a lot of charges of sexual misconduct against Ravi. And we won't go into details. We won't talk about that, but just say it's bad. No, we need to let the ugly stuff stand. I think part of the problem in the Christian church especially is that we don't ever want to like speak the ugliness out loud, and it allows us to sort of smooth over the ugliness and make it into something that doesn't sound as bad. Like we absolutely should be using the ugly terms and describing the ugly things that he did when we're talking about the charges. Just like a lot of Christians will say, this is something that came up in the movie I was involved in, a small group, which go to smallgroupthemovie.com. I believe you can go see that. But it's a great movie about church small groups. And I had the opportunity to be involved in a side project on that. But there's a scene where a bunch of Christians are sitting around. They're like, I have a personal intention. Just pray for it. I have a special intention. Christians don't want to get messy. They don't want you to know their messiness. So when they don't want you to know what ugly thing they need you to pray for, they'll go, oh, I have a special intention. And I think that because we don't like to let the ugly and embarrassing things out, and I think it would be better for Justin and his organization to leave that video up, perhaps put a disclaimer on it, as he said he's doing with the other shows, but put a disclaimer on it. We understand that the point of view has changed here, but I think it's important for us to have this reminder. You know, we shouldn't erase history. We should have this reminder of who we all were when Ravi died and how when we all lionized and we all did it. Even I did that. What a great man. I didn't know hardly anything about him, but I knew how he was received in the church. So perhaps these cringy things and these embarrassing things should stand as a reminder to us.
At the time we recorded it, the spa allegations were unknown, of course. But nevertheless, like so many others, I was too quick to give Ravi the benefit of the doubt over those sexting allegations from 2 years previous. I didn't ask the awkward questions I should have asked because, well, as I said, I didn't want it to be true. I wanted Ravi to be the hero of the hour, to have a great legacy for the work of Azim to continue strong. I was wrong, as were many of us who too willingly accepted the narrative that he and the organisation put out around the Laurie Ann Thompson affair.
I was too willing to accept the narrative. And this is something I complain about a lot in politics. We're too willing to accept the narrative. We're too willing to accept the narrative of a headline. We're too willing to accept the narrative of your news outlet. I don't know how many times I can say this, but news is just entertainment. So if you think that you're just getting straight, real, straight up news, and what could be wrong with the news? They just reported it. No, the news is entertainment. And so entertainment thrives on producing content that people will buy, watch, click on, listen to. So it's market tested. If the news isn't entertainment, then why are there commercial breaks? Right? It's entertainment. They're selling ads. So it's a form of entertainment. So it's just, and not, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just, if you can understand that going into watching your news, then you know you're not getting all the news. You're not getting all the information. You're not getting the full perspective. You're getting the perspective that they think is going to sell the ads that they need to sell to make money during the time you're watching TV. So a lot of us are too willing to buy the narrative. And I have to check myself a lot, because as a conservative commentator over the year, who is a former liberal, by the way, you know, who kind of had a journey out of that ideology, it's so easy for me to just automatically side with a conservative politician or a Republican politician. And because I know that the narrative has been wrestled away from that side of the spectrum, publicly speaking, I get defensive about it. Or I just automatically assume that what the other person is saying is untrue. I have to check myself all the time. I do it all the time. I have a huge confirmation bias as a conservative. And so it's something that I am constantly questioning myself about. It's something that I'm constantly asking myself, am I reacting to this because I don't want this to be true about someone that I like? Or am I reacting to this because I know this isn't true and I know this person doesn't have all the information? It can become reflexive. As Christians and as voters and as people involved in political discussion, it is so vital. If we want to, I know everyone's complaining about this air of tension that we've got going on. We've never been more divided, and it's just, people seem so hateful all around. If we want to change that, then one of the things we have to be willing to do is at least admit, at least entertain the notion that our narrative is not the narrative. We need to be able to at least entertain the idea that the narrative that we have accepted does not embody the entire truth, or maybe even any of it. And that's tough. That's why this video that Justin did, I was so impressed by it. That's what he's doing right now is tough. It's something I had to do myself. When I didn't do a YouTube video, but it was a reckoning I had to come to terms with in myself as I took my political journey from kind of default Democrat, default liberal as a Black American woman to someone who was kind of questioning the things I always believed and the people that I adored and idolized. And then when I got to meet them or work with them, realizing, oh, these aren't heroes. This isn't what I thought it was. This idea isn't what I thought it was. I didn't think critically enough about it. I didn't think hard enough about it. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. So as Justin was saying here, we have to be willing to at least entertain the notion. We don't have to go there all the way there. Maybe we're just like, no, this narrative is the right one. I made the right call on this, but at least need to be willing to entertain the notion that the angle of the story that we're looking at isn't the whole truth.
None of us saw what was coming, but I should have been more skeptical to start with. For that reason, I do want to publicly apologise to people like Steve Borman of Ravi Watch and fellow apologist Randall Rouser, whose voices, frankly, I chose to tune out when they were in my timeline asking inconvenient questions about Ravi at the time of his death.
This is something we do in politics all the time on both sides of the fence, right? We tune out the voices we don't want to hear. I talk a lot about the progressive left doing that because they own much of the, for lack of a better term, mainstream media. But it's not just them. It's all of us. You know, it's more bold with them because they have most of the avenues of major communication. But, you know, we are all guilty of this. I especially am guilty of this. I do it all the time. I have to remind myself, don't just say because it's XYZ person saying it. I guess the term of this podcast is XYZ guys. You know how I latch onto a term and it just pops up every podcast. It just is in my head. Can't let go now. It's XYZ this episode. So I'm listening to reporters XYZ on CNN or whatever. It's so easy for me to just immediately dismiss what they're saying. Because I'm like, well, they're lying anyway. They never tell the truth. And sometimes I'm right. A lot of times I'm right. But sometimes I'm wrong. Sometimes they're giving me information that is absolutely true. And we do it all the time. Oh, I'll never believe anything that's on CNN. It's all fake news. And so CNN might break something very important or be covering an issue that's very important. We're not giving it the time of day because we don't like the angle they're covering it from. Or you might look at Fox News and say Fox News is biased. Like they say they're fair and balanced, but they're biased. And so whatever they say about Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York, it's just because they hate liberals. It's just because they're fake news. It's just because they're morons and white supremacists. And maybe then we don't allow ourselves to see any of the truth in what they might have been reporting about Andrew Cuomo and his multiple sexual harassment allegations.
Politics are becoming more and more divisive every day. My name is Colin Jackson. I'm the co-host of Not Another Political Podcast, where we reject popular opinions and prioritize solutions over partisan dogma. Download Not Another Political Podcast on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast entertainment today.
We're too willing to dismiss information that doesn't line up with what we have already decided is the truth. And I'm not accusing you of anything. And again, I do the same thing. In fact, I think this is basic human nature, and it actually takes an extraordinary amount of energy to overcome that bias. And it's not a type of energy, in my opinion, most people want to put into their thinking or their politics or their religion. I think most people in the world are primed to just go along to get along. And so it does take, it's a deliberate effort. It's like working out in a way, which I also hate doing. It's a deliberate effort.
I had wanted to believe in Ravi, the master apologist, the family man, the spiritual hero. But our heroes always have a habit of letting us down, don't they? And now with the truth laid bare, and perhaps only even a portion of that, I'm left with the question, how can we do better than this? Ultimately, the person responsible for what happened was Ravi Zacharias, and he'll answer to God for the sins against his victims that he took with him to the grave. But the rest of us need to ask ourselves hard questions about the kind of culture that allowed Ravi's deception to occur, and to make sure it can't happen again. So here are five suggestions. One, we need to be more sceptical. We need to question our heroes. I run a show that involves asking and responding to hard questions from sceptics, but often we're not sceptical enough of those we admire.
I'll stop them there. I mean, that can be applied to politics. It absolutely can be. This is what I started my journey into this ideology during the Bush administration, but I don't think I really like became clear about what I believed and who I was until Obama came along. And the Obama administration was really one of the things that sort of made me think, because I was being told, like, you're a black woman. My family and I were living in the same area as he was from, quote from, I mean, he's from all over, but he was living on the south side of Chicago at that time. And we were living in Gary, which is just south of the south side of Chicago. And so a lot of people were excited about him. And it was just assumed that I would like him, but I was like, but I don't know anything about him. And every time, and this is before I was even into politics, and I still would have counted myself as a liberal, but I kept saying, I don't know anything about him. I don't know who he is. I don't know what he believes. There are some issues that are very important to me as a taxpayer, as somebody who works with mentoring students, and I run an after school program. Like, there are just, I'm a huge school choice advocate. School choice is like that's a voting issue for me. It's one thing that I definitely go to the polls for, and which makes it very difficult to vote for Democrats ever, because they oppose publicly school choice. And it was his views on school choice where I was like, this guy, I don't like him. And I'm skeptical of what his motives are and who he is. And just that questioning was enough to get me, you know, insulted and called moron or a race traitor. And that really was like a revelation to me. And the thing is that if you're from that area of the country, if you're from Chicago, you know what Chicago politics are. Chicago politics are famous for being corrupt and run by the mob. The unions own Chicago. They're infamous. And so I was thinking at the time, but we all know how Chicago politics are run. Are we supposed to believe that this guy came up through the Chicago political system, was nurtured in the Chicago political system, made it all the way to being a United States senator and then candidate for the president of the United States, and he's never once gotten his hands dirty? Am I supposed to believe that? The logic doesn't add up. We all know what politics are in this state. Nobody gets to success unless they have bent or compromised in some corrupt way at some point. That was when I first started learning what it meant to be skeptical and what the price of that can be. But Justin is absolutely right. In faith, in politics, in your personal relationships, even, you know, with acquaintances, with people that you've just met. A healthy skepticism is good. A healthy amount of skepticism is good. And I've said it on this show before, but in my dozen years in this business, I have been disappointed by a lot of heroes, and I would never name names unless, you know, some real information came out. But I can guarantee you that whatever side of the fence you sit on, I've seen your politician doing something in public that would change your vote. That you think that this person has a great marriage or really cares about kids and they don't. You know, maybe you think they're faithful to their wife and they're not. Maybe you think they're about social justice, but they're actually a closet racist. It flies across the political spectrum. And I don't expect people to automatically switch sides, but if we could just treat our own politicians that we love with a modicum of skepticism, we might go easier on the narrative about each other.
We all suffer in that way from confirmation bias, whether Christian, atheist, or something else. To question a person, ideology, or doctrine isn't to be disloyal. It's about using our mind critically, even when we may not like the answer.
Justin, I don't think he listens to my show. I don't know why he would. He probably has a million things going on. But this is what the show is. Thinking critically about the narratives that we automatically believe, the assumptions we make, the ideas that we believe. Thinking critically, and that does include a healthy amount of skepticism. And yes, that even applies to your faith. I make it a regular practice to challenge my own faith. I mean, atheists or any other religion who look at me as a believer in Christ and think, what, that is silly. What a silly story. You're not telling me anything that I haven't already said to myself a million times. It's not like I look at the story of Christ on the cross and say to myself, yeah, it's absolutely unassailable. Of course, it makes perfect sense. Now, sometimes I think this is absolutely crazy. Are we listening to this story, everyone? It's insane. It's only when I try to consider anything outside of that I realize everything else is insane, too. So I might as well go with this insane thing because I really love what the ultimate message of it is, which is we have a God who created us with purpose and who loves us passionately and who wants us with him. Took it to church, folks. Yes. Amen.
Number two, we need accountability. No one, no matter how much of a saintly demeanor they project, should be above the structures of accountability in an organization. As
I'd love that for that to apply to politics. It does not, but wouldn't that be great?
Christian ministries founded on good intentions can often collapse because the practical realities of financial, ethical, and organizational accountability weren't built in from the beginning.
That happens all the time in politics. I've said it often on this show. Any organization that starts off as an activist organization will inevitably descend into territory like Justin is talking about. I use the Tea Party as a great example, but another example is Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement, and even Occupy Wall Street, which kind of found a new life as Antifa. But it's the same thing. I'll take the Tea Party movement because I was intimately involved in that when I first became conservative. It was filled with a lot of well-intentioned people who didn't want Obamacare and were sick of rising taxes. And it was supposed to be a bipartisan movement. And in the beginning, it was, because it was just about taxes and Obamacare. But because those are issues that are very conservative issues, it ended up being populated with a lot of conservatives. Well, it became a huge movement. It was a huge movement. And the activist class realized that they could make money being the activist class. And as soon as they realized that, it all went to hell. And the Tea Party movement is no more. And there are organizations out there that call themselves Tea Party organizations, but they're just perpetual fundraising organizations. It's the same thing with Black Lives Matter. They did the same thing. They raised $90 million last year. Do you know where any of it went? I know you probably think you do, but if you looked into it, there's a lot of missing money. There's a lot of money because people realize that they could make money. Me Too. What a great movement. It started out really great. I've talked about, it was Tara. Oh, I'm sorry, baby girl. I cannot remember your last name. Tara somebody. I'll look it up later, or you look it up. And she was a Black woman, I think out of New York, who started the movement years earlier to bring attention to this issue of harassment in the workplace. And then when the Weinstein thing broke, it brought her story to light, and Hollywood latched on to her movement. Me Too was her movement. And she was nervous at first because she said, I thought they were going to come and take this over and water it down. And that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they did. And now hashtag Me Too has become a bit of a joke. Hashtag Me Too has been stretched so far to provide publicity photos or clips or whatever for so many celebrities that it's lost its teeth. So the Me Too movement has really lost a lot of its teeth because it was co-opted by people who realized, oh, I can make money doing this and I can get social clout and political clout doing this. And it became less about the victims of guys like Harvey Weinstein. So this is a thing that happens all the time, and we really need to be careful. When you start something that's, quote, a movement, it is very easy for it to descend into just a movement that's for just an organization that is for personal financial gain.
Number three, we need to focus on truth rather than reputation. Now, this sounds obvious, but it isn't always so obvious when you're in the thick of running a large, complex, multifaceted organization. But the fact is, the truth will out eventually, as many religious and secular institutions have discovered after trying to cover up abuse allegations rather than bring them out into the light. And truth telling can be an incredibly painful process. So is excising a cancer, but it's necessary if the body is to survive. As Jesus memorably put it, if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life maimed than with two hands to go into hell. Number four, we need to repent. That means more than just saying sorry once the facts can no longer be denied. It's about making genuine reparation to victims, acknowledging our own complicity in a web of deception, and making the changes that need to be made to ensure a culture that breeds that kind of deception doesn't occur again.
I'm not sure how we would apply this to the political arena, except perhaps maybe in the media arena. So when we know that we're wrong about a story, or I have trouble doing this. I'm wrong all the time on Twitter. If I'm wrong, I just pretend I didn't say it. But being able to say, oh, I was wrong, and then learn. Oh, here's a great example. I hate it when you guys are headline readers. What do I always tell you? The information is not in the headline. The headline is I do this for a living. And we craft our headlines carefully so that you will click. The information is not in the headline. The clickbait is in the headline. The information is in the body of the piece. And most of the time, even in what you think is a straight up journalistic reporting piece, the information is not at the top. The first two or three paragraphs is actually opinion with a little bit of quotes sprinkled in. And the real information is at the bottom. Most of us know you're not going to make it all the way to the bottom. So if the information doesn't support the premise that we're making, we'll just put it in the bottom of the piece. That is modern, quote, journalism these days. I say we, but I'm just an op-ed journalist, so I'm only ever telling people what I think anyways. So I do not engage in that. But we as a profession do this. So somebody posted a headline on Twitter the other day, and it was so salacious. I was like, oh my gosh, look at this. And I shared it. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And I gave some, you know, and I've been cussing a lot on Twitter lately. This is how I know I need to get back to church. I can't go to church right now. I can go to the strip club. I can go to the casino. I can't go to church. But anyways, I need to get back to church. And so I always know I'm in desperate need of community when I start cussing a lot on Twitter. So my bad, folks. I'm floundering like the rest of my fellow Christians in California right now. We're just struggling to find our way. All that to say that I shared the headline and then someone tweeted back at me, that's not what the story is about. You didn't read it. And I was like, dang, I got caught. I didn't read it. I didn't take my own advice. So sometimes maybe we need to be willing to be corrected and repent from that. So maybe now I do need to make an effort. Read those stories before I share them with a pithy comment on Twitter. You know, be more thoughtful about that instead of just looking for that instant gratification of those likes or those shares.
And number five, we need to reform. It feels like there's a reckoning of sorts happening in the Christian church at the moment as a plethora of stories of fallen leaders have emerged in recent years. So why have we built so many ministries based around the charismatic personality of an individual? Why are we so good at creating pedestals for gifted but terribly flawed people to tumble from? What are the idols of success, fame and influence that we've inadvertently come to bow before? Too often it feels like it's back to business as normal after a restoration process or a ministry name change. But if the heart isn't changed and the ethos essentially remains the same, then we're going to be doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past. So we need to learn our lessons. And I speak these words to myself as much as anyone else involved in Christian ministry, because Jesus won't be interested ultimately in how many people we reached or how successful our ministry was. He'll be interested in who we became, whether we grew more into his likeness.
I'll stop him right there. Justin, thank you so much for these words. I think they were so valuable. I think that last point you made is great. And how can we change? How can we do things differently? This is one of the notes I had as I was watching his video. I just have hero worship on that. And in the political arena, it is very common, as we have seen over the last 4 years, to galvanize around a personality. We saw the same thing with Barack Obama. And in fact, the Globe galvanized around his personality, but they never really asked any questions about what he was doing. You know, they never really asked any questions. They were just like, hey, this black guy is, as Joe Biden himself said, clean and articulate, the first clean and articulate black guy on the scene. Our current president's words about the president he served under. I still can't believe it sometimes, but a lot of people said that about Obama, right? Like, he seems like a great guy. I did a little Google Hangout with Obama during his administration years ago. And my liberal BFF was like, see, I told you, isn't he so nice? And he was nice. Like, it was fun. We had a good time. He's like, see, isn't he nice? And it's like, okay, I'm sure he's a nice guy. Like, I'm sure we could sit down and have a beer together and have fun. But I don't, you know, oppose Barack Obama based on what kind of guy I think he is. I know what his policies on the tax structure for middle class families are. I know what his foreign policy in Nigeria and Namibia is, and it's not good for the people there. I know, you know, so there are, I'd say all that just not to rehash the Obama administration, but just I use him as a big example because he was another hero. Like him and Trump had created these cults of personalities. It's the same thing with Trump, right? He's got this cult of personality, and there are so many people out there who never really question what he's doing or how he might speak behind closed doors or what his true intention is behind. He would just say something, and then a lot of people will be like, well, Trump said it, so it's true, because many Trump voters liked his platforms and his policies, but there were still many more who just were galvanizing around his personality. And again, that's not just Trump. It was the same thing for Hillary, right? There were a lot of people. This is what I was complaining in the beginning of the podcast with Justin and the way some of his shows are framed. You know, he never asks the question from the other side of the table. Should Christians vote for Hillary? Should Christians vote for Joe Biden? You know, that but there were a lot of people who were devastated on election night in 2016, not because they knew anything about Hillary, but because she was a woman and therefore she was a hero to them. And they had never really asked any questions about her.
Politics are becoming more and more divisive every day. My name is Colin Jackson. I'm the co-host of Not Another Political Podcast, where we reject popular opinions and prioritize solutions over partisan dogma. Download Not Another Political Podcast on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast entertainment today.
So I would love to see the Ravi Zacharias scandal, for those who are aware of it, to teach us all a lesson on how we deal with each other politically. Perhaps we all need to start by admitting that our heroes are very rarely, this is how I know it's time to wrap up, very rarely heroes. And in fact, I think I'm done with heroes, to be honest. I think I have been in this game long enough, and I've been doing this job long enough, and I am now old enough to realize that everybody has something about them that will disappoint you. And that is why I really discourage people to make heroes of their politicians. I don't care if it's Donald Trump or Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or your school board president. Do not make heroes of these people. Do not make heroes of these celebrities. Everybody thinks Tom Hanks is a hero. Look up Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. Just Google both their names together and see what pops up. There's a lot of, there are a lot of scary stuff, scary rumors out there about guys like Tom Hanks that we would see as just perfect without reproach, beyond reproach. We do this for our pastors. We do this for our moms and dads. You know, that this is human nature. And the problem is that humans are not designed to be worshipped. And so when we offer worship to another human being, it necessarily corrupts them. I have yet to meet or know of an example of one human being who was not in some way negatively changed by worship and adoration. Why do you think these big Christian pastors, see, it's time to go. It's not Christian pastors, just Christian pastors either. On our community page over at Locals, and you can join us over there for discussions every day, davisnation.locals.com. We have bonus episodes of JLTY and all that good stuff. But my friend Leah is on there, and she's Jewish, and when she heard about the Ravi Zacharias scandal, she said, oh, it's not just him. And she talked about a very popular and famous rabbi who had just gone through a huge sex scandal and abuse scandal. So it's not just in the Christian realm. But we do have a tendency, particularly in the church, to idolize people. And this is what happens when, this is why I don't like celebrity pastors. Not them personally, but I don't like the idea of the celebrity pastor. I think if a pastor is becoming a celebrity, he needs to step down. He needs to step away. I don't see any man who can withstand the pressure of fame and wealth. I don't see any man who can. And if you're thinking of one right now, I guarantee you that there is something about him that would devastate you if you knew it. Because there's something about you that would devastate other people if they knew it, right? You're no different than that guy. Justin's no different than Ravi Zacharias. I'm no different than Billy Graham. Or we all have the same temptations, desires, human natures. Some of us get more help to deal with it than others. Some of us find a path that can help us step towards righteousness and away from temptation. But not all of us do. And we're all just human. We all have things. I get letters all the time on this show from people who are like, I feel like we could be best friends. But it's like, I'm not a great friend. I sound like one on the radio, but like I'm a hard person to keep up with. I don't keep in touch with people. I'm not very good at returning texts. I forget birthdays all the time. The friends I've cultivated in my life are people who have learned to accept that about me and learn to keep pushing me to be better about being an engaged friend. And so it might seem like we would be, but you might get really frustrated after you sent your fourth text that I didn't answer. We all have things we'd be disappointed with in each other, and that includes your favorite politician. And again, I think it's fine. I think it's fine to really love a politician and really like support them and be excited about them and get behind them. But don't lie to yourself about them. If you're be willing to, and it's okay. Like, again, it's okay. If you want to say, I'm actually okay with my president taking his intern into the Oval Office and doing obscene things with cigars with her, that's none of my business and I don't care. Say that. I mean, I disagree, but you say it and you own it, and that's fine. At least you're being honest about where your biases lay. And then that's a discussion we can start on even ground with, right? We're not having to force each other to tell the truth about our beliefs. We're coming to the table honest about where our biases are. It's why I always tell you guys, I encourage critical thinking on this show. I encourage true tolerance on this show and true grace on this show. But also know that Kira's point of view is a conservative point of view. It is not a secret. So when you hear me speaking, you know, that's one of my filters. And another one of my filters is being a Black woman. And another one of my filters is being a Christian. And that's why I always tell you about the news, right? You don't have to, people ask me all the time, what's the best objective news source? There's no such thing. There's no objective news anymore. It doesn't exist. I just told you why, because news is entertainment. It doesn't exist. Every quote journalist is an opinion journalist. I'm sorry, you know what? I'll retract that. Straight up good information-based news does exist at your local level. It's your local reporters. They're the ones doing real news. And in fact, they're the ones that report the stories that become national stories, right? And then we opinion journalists pick it apart and turn it into an ideological battle. That's what we do. But the information comes from these on-the-beat reporters who are doing old-school shoe-leather journalism. It's your local people at your local station in Sioux Center, Iowa. It's those people. The people that will never get the Emmys and accolades and the national attention. But for everything else is just, it's totally biased. So where do you go to find unbiased information? Well, you don't. And you don't have to. I don't expect you to do that. Who has time for that? Who has time to do what I do every day, which is read both sides of every story so I can form a full opinion? Who has time for that? You guys are raising families. You're going to work. You have hobbies. All you need to be able to do is to admit the bias of the outlet that you're watching or getting your news from. That's all you need to do. As long as you go into that knowing that you're getting a certain point of view, and then you can make your choices from there accordingly. You can say, well, I probably agree with everything they're saying, but at least I can recognize that I might not be getting the full story, but actually I'm okay with that. I don't feel like going and watching Fox News. I'm fine with MSNBC. I know that they skew left. I know that all their journalists are Democrats, and I'm fine with it because that's the news I want to get. And I think that's fine. I think that's all we need to do. It's when we start labeling the other side, whichever side you're on, as automatically evil, as automatically fake, as automatically worthless, without putting any critical thought into it or making an effort to, as Justin says, understand that perhaps you've allowed yourself to be deceived or perhaps the narrative isn't exactly what you thought it was, to me, that's enough. It's like I said on my Unity show. We don't need unity. It's a silly concept when it comes to politics, unity. I mean, the very nature of elections is disunity. But we don't need unity. We don't need that. Why would I want to be unified with someone I'm fundamentally opposed to on certain issues? Abortion is very important to me. I fall strongly on the side of life, and I believe that life in the womb should be protected by our government, just as life outside of the womb is, in the same respect. I feel very strongly about that. So no, I'm not going to have unity with somebody who believes that a baby should be able to be aborted up until the moment of birth. We cannot find unity on that issue, but we can find tolerance. So we don't need unity. We just need tolerance. I can tolerate that point of view. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. And I think it's abhorrent. But I can tolerate its existence because we live in this free society where people have the right to believe this. And in fact, this act is legal according to our law. So I can tolerate your opinion on it. And that's all we need is tolerance. I just think, I just wish that people who are listening to this Ravi scandal, people who know about it and are involved in it and having the discussions around it, I wish we could take these lessons and posit them out into the rest of our life. Like, what if we took the lessons we're learning from Ravi and applied them to our political discussions as well? They can be applied. And I do believe there's room for some humility here. And there's room for us to admit that we've not always gotten the truth right about each other. And perhaps we don't have to ever find all these points of agreement. We only have to accept that we may get each other wrong. We may be getting each other wrong. We may be believing outside sources that we have thought for sure were truthful and bet our lives that they were telling the truth. Just as Justin would have bet his life that Ravi was telling the truth when he denied those sexting allegations. There may be, if we can admit that, hey, there may be situations where I don't have all the information. I don't have the full truth. I haven't explored the thoughts and the beliefs of this person enough to make this very personal judgment about their moral character and their eternal soul. So I'll just read down the notes really quick in closing. I know we're going long. These are all the things that I was thinking about as I was watching Justin's video, as I was going through this Ravi scandal, and as I was thinking about how I would apply it to politics. What if you're wrong? That's a good question to ask. You may know you're right, but it's fine. You should be asking, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? I ask this often. Not when it comes to conversations with my husband, by the way. Just in politics and faith, y'all. Don't get carried away. Avoid hero worship. We're all guilty of it in some respect or another. We've seen examples on both sides of the political spectrum. I've given them to you today. Everybody is susceptible to hero worship. Don't think that your politics gives you any kind of immunity. Who is believable? Well, you know, these women who were accusing Ravi, they weren't believable at first because we said they weren't. Because obviously some atheists had an axe to grind with Ravi, or some women were trying to extort him for some money because he's so successful. Who is believable? Who owns the truth? Ravi owned the truth for a while, and then we came to find out it wasn't the truth at all that he was holding. It was all a lie. So maybe we need to be applying that skepticism that Justin was talking about in all areas of public discourse. A healthy skepticism, not so much that you're confused about what you believe yourself, but you have to understand that, and I can't say it on this show enough, when it comes to politics, the right does not own the truth, and the left does not own the truth. Ask yourself, how badly do I want this to be true? I say that all the time when you're reading a headline and it looks, quote, too good to be true. It's because it is. How badly do you want that headline to be true? Read the story first. And we're all willing to be deceived. Don't forget. Justin laid it out very nicely for us. And I agree and we do this even in our relationships. Oh, how many, maybe you've been in this relationship, or maybe you've had friends who are in an abusive relationship, and the signs are all there. Oh, guys, I got to tell you about this podcast I've been listening to, obsessed with. Something Was Wrong. That's what it's called. Something Was Wrong. And I think this woman has 4 seasons out now. The 4th season is unfortunately about Jonestown, which I can't hear anymore about Jonestown. I've listened to every podcast there is to do on it. But what she really does is she takes stories of people who are abused or taken advantage of by sociopaths in certain ways, and she tells their stories. And I mean, it's riveting. But you know, some of these stories are of people, you know, like a woman whose husband had, you know, different identities and was deceiving her in all kinds of ways. And he was a complete sociopath and lied to her about everything, about his job, his family, everything. You know, there were signs. Later on, breaking it down, she said, well, yeah, there were signs. There were red flags early on, but I dismissed them. I didn't want them to be true. He was so nice. He was so kind. He loved my daughter. He was nice to my dog. I thought he was. And turns out this one guy was like, would be all buddy buddy with her dog in public, and then privately he'd be like torturing the dog. Oh, it's fascinating. Something Was Wrong is the name of the podcast. Go find it. You won't regret it. And I'm obsessed with it. But it's a great example of how we're willing to ignore the red flags about people, or how we're willing to let signs slip because we don't want it to be true. So this isn't a left or right thing. This isn't a Trump or Obama thing. This isn't a Christian versus secular thing. This is human nature. We will ignore red flags because we don't want them to be true. And the human mind is extremely adept at dumping information that it does not feel is useful. So let us not deceive ourselves, and let us not be deceived by each other. But let us all seek truth in our faith and in our politics. And it's okay to be feisty and passionate and all that. You go to my Twitter feed and you will see me giving people what for all day long. Every time I get sarcastic on there, there's somebody who's like, she's got Jesus in her bio, but she doesn't know anything about Jesus. I mean, I love Jesus, but like, I'm still a human being. And also, Jesus was pretty sarcastic, by the way. He probably wasn't as mean as I can get sometimes. And I know some people be like, you're not that mean. But when I think about the other people I run with, like in Christian circles, they would never be tweeting like I tweet. Sorry, everybody. But my vocation is not in the church. My vocation is in the secular field. And I bring the church with me, but my vocation is in the secular field. So I'm sorry, people who are disappointed that I don't sound like they think Jesus should sound. However, what was the point I was getting at? I guess just that you can still be you. You can still have your points of view. And I would never want to disabuse you of whatever notions you have about politics. It's not my job to change your mind. But it is my job to give you something to think about. And just because I'm giving you something to think about doesn't mean that I think you're a moron or stupid, or even that you're necessarily wrong. So we need to stop being so defensive with each other. And also, we need to stop coming to each other with a preconceived narrative on what they believe. That works both ways, always, up, down, left, right, wherever. All right, let's wrap it up. Thank you, Justin, for that video. Thank you so much for taking the time to break down that scandal for us and your reaction to it. Again, his podcast is Unbelievable with Justin Brierley. You can look that up. It's available wherever you find your podcasts. I highly recommend it. There are hundreds of shows going back a decade or more, and it's just fascinating. He has interviews with people from different faiths, debates between atheists and Christians, and it's all very respectful. And there's a few heated episodes, but not many. And again, a big fan of the show. Can't recommend it enough. You can find from me. Where else can you find me? Well, of course, You can go over to davisnation.locals.com, sign up there, and you can interact with me personally on there. We can talk about some of these subjects. And a lot of the people over there are bringing up subjects on their own, bringing up their own questions, having their own discussions. So there's a lot of chatter going on over there. And if you want to do it in a place where your family and friends aren't going to like see your comments on Facebook and judge you for it, that's a great place to go. Plus, you get bonus episodes of the show, bonus videos. We do Zoom chats. I haven't done a Zoom chat in a while, so I'm about to schedule another one with our folks. And we got a book club. A Public Opinion is our book by Walter Lippmann, I think. It's an older book, but Public Opinion is the first book we're reading. So you can join the book club over there. Lots going on. If you're listening to the show and you're a fan, please rate and review. It helps us so much. And don't forget to check out my other show that I do every Saturday with three good friends, Dr. Chris Metzler, Lenny McAllister, and Jeff Charles, three great colleagues. Every Saturday, it's us four Black conservatives who talk about the news of the week from our perspective. There's not a lot of voices out there like ours, so we're always we disagree on a lot, so we always have a good time in our discussions. But it's a point of view that doesn't get a lot of representation in the public square. So that show's called Red and Black. You can find that on YouTube. Please go and subscribe that and give it a little rating if you would. And every show drops every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern. What else do I have to pub? If you would like to hit me up and talk to me about this show or any other show on JLTY, just email me at Kira Davis at PM.me. Kira Davis at PM.me, and put JLTY in the subject column so that I know that is what it is pertaining to. And I will be appearing on one of my sister shows here on the FCB network, Not Another Political Podcast. I'll be appearing on that show this weekend, so you can check that out. Go to Not Another Political Podcast wherever you find your podcasts and check me out on that show. So happy to be chatting with some of my colleagues on my very own network. I'm so proud of our network. So definitely tune in for that. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that we've all been given a lot to think about. I know that this whole thing has made me reconsider a lot. And, you know, and just go through that regular exercise that I do of questioning myself. Am I right? Do I have all the information? Where are my biases? Are they preventing me from seeing? So it's been good for me too. Until we meet again. Don't forget, every once in a while, just stop and listen to yourself. If you don't like the way I talk, then why am I on your mind? If you don't like the way I rock, then why are we wasting time? We fight and we argue, you'll still love me blind. If we don't mess this whole thing up, guaranteed I can blow your mind. And tonight I'm alive in a dollar sign, guaranteed I can blow your mind.
The FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.